This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
All legends are born in truth. From the Amazon came the legend of the Tears of the Moon. Over the centuries, many expeditions went searching for the healing tears of legend. None more famous than that of the conquistador Don Roque de Aguirre. But the jungle protected the tears. History will tell you his journey ended in failure. But legend tells more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. As we've been saying for a while, cinemas are reopened. People are going back. You can book tickets. And so what we're also seeing, therefore, is a number of releases coming out late to us. The rest of the world has already seen it, but it's an interesting lineup of content. So yesterday we spoke about The African Queen specifically because today we wanted to talk about Jungle Cruise, which stars, of course, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Emily Blunt.
If you don't know already, this is based on a ride from the Disney theme park.
And so it shows.
That's what I was going to say. Don't expect a lot of depth from this film. But you know what? If I had to go back to the cinema for something, I think this is a great one because it's so much fun visually. You can see that sweet, sweet Disney money. And of course, personality-wise, fun-wise, it's a brainless, fun time at the cinema. The kind of thing I've missed.
The biggest issue with this movie for me is that I never know how to review movies like this. I feel like it's not for me at all. Like, I don't think the movie is designed for anyone above the age of 12. Maximum. So I'm wondering, and I don't know because I don't have nephews or nieces that age. So do kids enjoy the movie? Because if kids enjoy the movie, then it's a really fun, big budget, blockbuster, colorful way to spend a couple of hours in the cinema. It's really fun. But if kids don't enjoy it, then I don't know what the movie is doing because like none of it kind of applies. Like I had fun watching it, but if I never saw it at all, I wouldn't have lost out on anything. So that's always my conflict with stuff, especially with house brand Disney stuff. I don't know who it's made for, and I don't know if I'm supposed to enjoy it being my age and all.
I have a bunch of thoughts, but before that, let's talk about the plot, which is not the most important part.
Maybe
of the
title
film
doesn't just cover it all.
It does, more or less, because so Emily Blunt plays Dr. Lily Houghton, who essentially wants to go on a cruise to find out more about a magical flower because of a thing that she was left. And then she gets to the Amazon and through a series of hijinks and trickery meets up with Frank, played by The Rock, who has a boat that he is willing to lease to her, also for reasons of his own. Jack Whitehall's along for the ride, and that's it. That's the whole thing. And they're Germans, because they're always Germans.
And a jaguar.
Sure.
Yeah. Germans, a jaguar, killer bees, and woodland creatures. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair summation?
Yes.
And that's more or less it. And the movie like kind of just romps along. It doesn't want you to think too long about what the flower of the moon is or whatever. What is it called?
Tears of the Moon.
Thank you.
Is it?
Yeah, Tears of the Moon. But you see, when I said Flowers of the Moon, it sounded convincing because it would have worked just as well. But it doesn't want you to think too long about what's happening or why it's happening or who might be double-crossing who. It really just wants you to enjoy how beautiful the film is, and it is beautiful, and to enjoy the sparky back and forth between Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt, of which there is an abundance. And for those reasons, my thing is about the film, I don't think I would have liked it in any other year. Even in 2020, I would have been in the wrong pandemic mood for it. But in 2021, after 2 years of seeing just the walls of my house, you know, I think I was ready for the kind of escape and the utter escapism and break for the brain that Jungle Cruise offered.
I think it helps a lot that the main actors are so, so fun and charismatic to watch, and they have such good chemistry. Because if you take Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson out of this equation and just put in any other actor, I don't think it would have worked as well. I think they know fully well what film they're in. They know what tone to strike for, and it works. They're never not fun or interesting to watch when they're sparring, or when Emily Blunt is punching, slapping The Rock for the fifth time. It's mm-hmm. still as funny. Jack Whitehall is actually really entertaining as well. So I think the sort of the force of personality in this film is what really helps it. I kept thinking of Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, it's another Disney ride that made it into a film, right? And I kept thinking how Pirates of the Caribbean was really great because of Johnny Depp, but it's also genuinely a great film. I just kind of wish that this had been that. It doesn't mean that a silly premise doesn't have to stand for the test of time. For me, I don't know that I would really remember Jungle Cruise a week later. I barely remember it 4 days later. But while it lasted, it was fun.
So I think that was also an issue for me, because I kept thinking about Pirates of the Caribbean and how the CGI in that is like so much better for its time. And the first couple of movies I really loved because of the pacing, the characters, the adventure. And I kind of knew what they were going for, talking about, like, you know, the mission or the quest, or, you know, what they were supposed to get by the end of it. In Jungle Cruise, I had fun, and I love the fact that we got to see all these, like, it's visual, like eye candy and stuff. But I also had huge problems with the stuff like the CGI and the effects and how
Same.
Fake they, you know,
Same.
it's so weirdly fluid and cheap. So all of that was kind of like distracting for me. And I think I just kept thinking, like, how did they make Pirates of the Caribbean in 2004 look that good and then not be able to replicate or sort of like quadruple that effort in 2021? I don't know. Maybe the budget went for so many other things, but it's just these tiny distracting things that took me out of the movie altogether. Still enjoyed it, but took me out.
So Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides apparently is officially the most expensive film, although of course people are secretive about how much films cost, right? But that one is apparently $378.5 million. For comparison, Jungle Cruise is $200 million. So, which still is up there. And you're right, I'm not exactly sure where it goes. And I think, so I want to contest the CG a little bit, not because I think it's good, but because I think it's made worse by its unevenness. There are some things in the CG that are excellent, and they're mostly the things that I don't think should be there, meaning there's an entire subplot about conquistadors and stuff, because we're in the Amazon after all. And there's an entire subplot about Spanish conquistadors and a really dark, like, thing involving genocide and, you know, just, and I actually thought, to your point, Arvin, earlier about kids, I was thinking, if I were a kid, if I had a kid, would I want to watch this? Would I be cool with this entire murderous subplot, which also ends up with, like, you know, snakes coming out of eye sockets and things? And I understand that that's for the jump scares, and that most children's movies have a certain element of, you want to push that a little bit, right? You're introducing them to peril, you're introducing them to grossness. But there were some parts of Jungle Cruise actually that tipped the grossness scales a little too far. And that's where all the CG budget went. And then suddenly the jaguar is around looking like, I don't know, not fully jaguar-ish. Yeah.
The jaguar bothered me, like, because it's there a lot and it's sort of there in your face. And it doesn't look real. And we talked about African Queen yesterday. And I mean, of course, it's not a fair comparison, but I would almost rather just have that sort of animal that's at a distance that you're seeing from far away, and they're real animals, than this sort of, like, it looks like a graphic that, you know, the Google Lens where you have fake animals that pop up in your home. That's what it looks like. And in a quality production like this, it just felt weird.
It felt weird. Also, going back to the genocide, there is this whole sequence in the movie that has, like, it's a massive exposition dump, a huge flashback scene. And for some reason, like, there's Metallica and James Newton Howard doing a remix of each other, and that's the music, that's the score. And I don't know why I loved it, but also at the same time, I'm like, what is happening? Like, where is this even coming from?
And also, this felt like dark TV that you should be watching, right? And not like a Disney film.
And it's not even like in the, it's not a prologue. It doesn't happen like in the beginning, then the movie takes like a different tone. This is like in the middle, smack in the middle of a movie that did not introduce you to Metallica at all. And then they just show up in like ancient, some weird flashback story. I loved it, but I was so confused. I was so confused.
With the rock in a wig, of all the things. So, you know, you're bearing with a lot at this point. It's like, you're right. It's exposition dump. It's in the middle of the movie. It's kind of weird, but it's also kind of working. There's a lot of Spanish. Edgar Ramirez is doing his thing. And then the rock's in a wig. And you're like, this is a lot. You're asking a lot of the audience. And I liked it. So, I think that's the blend of this movie. Accepting that it is peak Disney of a certain type, meaning it's not peak Disney quality, but it's peak Disney doing Disney. So there's some stuff about it that's really cynical. There's also some stuff about it that works really well because fundamentally they know how to tell a story, and that's how it's all coming together.
Yeah. I don't know. I think people like The Rock. I've watched The Tooth Fairy and enjoyed it, you know? So
same.
I think films like these, if they get the casting right, it often sort of sails along. Oh, I'm really good with this today. I'm not even planning. I wish though that I think that now that I think about it, I wanted another Pirates. It could have been another Pirates, I feel, because of the casting they had. Perhaps it was never going to be, and it's fine, guys. It's fine. I would say you can watch it if you're happy to go back to the cinema. You would do worse than this one.
No, I completely agree. I know it sounds like I'm complaining about the film, but then we know that the sequel is coming out. And I'm happy that the sequel is coming out. I'm like, I'm going to watch the sequel no matter what. So, yeah.
We're talking today about Jungle Cruise, which came out much earlier in the rest of the world, but has basically just dropped here in our screens, in our cinemas. It is directed by Jaume Colet-Serra. It stars, of course, Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt, Edgar Ramirez, we mentioned. I think we can come back and talk a little bit more about the other performances because everyone's full on cheese and ham. Let us know if you've watched Jungle Cruise and if you plan to, perhaps WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
McGregor, I think you seem to be taking us off course. We should turn that way.
No, we're good. Stay on course. Like, Lagrimas de Castel is that way.
Frank, he's fine. I think you're mistaken.
I'm not mistaken. I'm the skipper. Lagrimas de Castel is straight ahead. Stay on course.
Frank, we can save 2 days going this way.
We cannot go that way. We go that way, it's rapids. You ever been down the rapids?
No, but I presume that you have, which is why I hired you. Turn that way, to the right, starboard, whatever you call it.
I'm not the one who can't swim, pants.
Well, don't you worry about that, Skippy.
Lady, it's Skipper.
My mistake.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvind. Today, we are reviewing Jungle Cruise. And we've talked quite a bit about Dwayne Johnson. I did want to bring up Emily Blunt because I love her. She's one of my favorite actresses in general. I could watch her in anything. And I think that she has this particular quality that's part of what I love most, which is to say she knows exactly what movie she's making all the time. She's that Michael Sheen thing, you know? It's like, it might be terrible. It might be truly awful.
She is. I never thought about that.
Yes. Someone who can stretch in any direction. You want me to sing? I can sing. You want me to do comedy? I can do comedy. You want me to do both and act opposite The Rock and a jaguar? Sure. And I loved how fully she embodied a role that probably didn't need that much fullness.
The film does that thing that could very easily be annoying, right? It's trying to do like, oh, women were not this at that time, but guess what? There were women like her who were doing these things. And I appreciate the effort. I appreciate the whole like women were not allowed to do science. But, you know, it wouldn't have worked without Emily Blunt. I think having her takes that cheesy premise, that obvious premise, and makes you want to root for her. And almost in a film like this, gets you to see why these things were so problematic. And I want to see more stories about female scientists of a particular era, right? So I love that about Emily Blunt. I also love that we get all of these prestige actors just doing rubbish roles and having such fun with it. Paul Giamatti, you know, in an Italian accent, Jesse Plemons in a German accent, Edgar Ramirez, you know, doing his own accent, presumably, but also very good, very cheesy. I love it. It's What are they even here for except for the Disney money?
It's the Disney money. I love it because I always imagine them backing like a dump truck full of money into one of these actors' houses and just like unloading it and going like, okay, this is what we need you to do. Because otherwise, why would they take on these roles, right? So it's, I'm not saying that, you know, money works wonders or whatever, but it's just fun to see actors who are usually serious about their craft sort of loosen up a bit in these movies and do what Disney tells them to do.
I thought Jesse Plemons in particular was delightful. You know, because
he was great.
Because he's like, I feel for the Germans and the Russians, you know, it doesn't matter what they do in real life. It doesn't matter what their countries are, where they're actually at. In Hollywood of a certain era, they're just always going to be these people, the ones hunting down the heroes for the Kaiser, you know, and just like full bore. And Jesse Plemons really leans into that. I mean, he's talking to bees. He's slamming knives into maps. He's doing all the...
driving a submarine.
In the Amazon. He's doing all the villain things. And I do think that CGI Proxima, the Jaguar aside, my uncertainties about tone aside, if we go back to the eye candiness of the film, the fact that it's done with a lot of fun, and you have the, I think the key thing is that the performers are selling the fun. Like, not so much like they are having fun on set, but like they want you, the audience, to have a really good time watching the film. That's how the movie feels. And I think that perhaps that's why, despite the multiple things that are wrong with it, it did work.
So taking that Pirates comparison again, right? I think the more I think about it, my problem is that I enjoyed it so much. I had so much fun watching the film that I want to actually remember plot points. And that's a weird sort of thing to say. Like when I think back about Pirates and I think of, you know, the specific plot elements that stick in my mind, specific scenes that I can still remember, the pirates sort of emerging from the water in the moonlight, you know, I want those scenes for this film because it's like I had a fun time, but I don't remember anything about it. And I kind of wish there was that to take away.
Can I ask you guys if you think the sequel is going to work? Because Disney has had a couple of cases like this, but they are kind of struggling to launch their own house brand IPs or franchises. Like just top of my head, Tron didn't work, Prince of Persia didn't work, Sorcerer's Apprentice, John Carter, and there's a bunch of others that really didn't take off, that they wanted to be big or their next big franchise, right? And then with stuff like Maleficent and maybe even Alice in Wonderland, the sequels didn't do as well as the first installment. So I don't know. I don't know if people want to see a Jungle Cruise 2. Like, I'm going to watch it for The Rock and Emily Blunt because, like you guys, I really enjoyed them. But do you guys think this will be like a trilogy? Like, does this have like Pirates of the Caribbean longevity in it or no?
Well, I mean, listening to that list of winners that you just came up with, I think this is the closest that they're going to get for a good long while, partly because they've got some stuff in there that really works. I don't actually think that the second installment is going to be much better, partly because this one was successful. Everybody seems to... When I say everybody seems to have enjoyed it, I don't mean critics, but I don't think Disney made it for critics. So it feels as if we're going to continue cruising along. I can do it too.
Join me on the boat.
Yes. It feels like we can go along at this level for a goodish period of time because I suspect that they will continue to make money.
I don't think I'll watch a sequel voluntarily. If you have to review it, I'll watch it. I'm not invested enough to watch the sequel. I actually think it'll do relatively well, maybe diminishing returns, but I'm pretty sure they could stretch this to a trilogy if they had The Rock at least signed on for all three, even if Emily Blunt doesn't want to do all three.
Is this also like an unofficial installment in The Rock is in the Jungle franchise that's going on, like with Rampage and Jumanji and The Rundown and this? And I'm
that
sure there are
multiverse.
A couple of others.
That's an exciting
that's
multiverse.
A multiverse. Also, I want to say, though, that because of his size, he never looks like he's in danger of anything. Like, even in the beginning, when Paul Giamatti's like hunting him with his henchmen and they're like, oh, you owe me money. I'm like, look, there's no way you're getting money from this guy. Like, just like look at him. Like, he's bigger than the boat.
He's going to throw you off the pier. I don't understand where this confidence, this deeply misplaced Paul Giamatti confidence is coming from. I think that The Rock's size is an interesting question to bring up at this stage in his career, because now everybody knows what he looks like. You know, he's one of the most bankable stars. Who saw this coming? But yeah, you know, he is. And yet, I think that the size does feed into certain things, like because you have two people on a boat, three people, but really two, you know that they're gonna, you know, build in a sort of will they, won't they romantic tension thing. And I didn't want that. And I think it's because I find it very hard to view The Rock in a romantic lens. And when I think about him clasping any of his co-stars in an embrace on screen, he's always like three times their size. It's just a bit tough to square.
Also his personality. See, the reason he's so bankable is because a contrast to that hulking frame is that he always seems like a great guy, like a nice guy, a fun guy. Just not the guy you want to see romancing the heroines. And I get it. I don't know why. I feel like I love him, but I don't want him to fall in love or have sexual tension on screen. Like, that bugs me.
I think they know that. That's why it kind of like crops up towards the third half, the third act of the film. You know, it's never really like that dominant throughout. It's mostly just their comedy and their chemistry and him like cracking jokes. So I think the producers know that, and he is a producer, so I think he knows that.
I don't want them to Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz it. Like, I don't want them to get married and then suddenly I have to keep watching them like do stuff, you know? I just, let's be friends. That's nice. I like them as friends.
Oh, and also the friends thing is great, right? Every film doesn't have to center around a romance. People can be friends and go on adventures together.
Speaking of which, their interviews outside the movie, the promotion for
Aren't
the film.
Great?
It's top notch. It's like, it's the same level as The Rock and Kevin Hart. Like, it's as good and as funny.
I think that we're co-signing those more heartily than we are the movie, which perhaps is a little bit about
Can you ship people not in a relationship, but in a friendship? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm shipping them as besties.
Same.
Agreed. Which is, I think, really the thing that powers Jungle Cruise, which is what we've been talking about today. Let us know if you've watched it, if you plan to, if you've gone back to the cinema. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.